Welcome to Small Bites Radio with Donato Marino and Derek Tim. We hope you're hungry.
Raw spaghetti you can eat with a spoon. Oh, SpaghettiOs.
Hit it.
Where's the beef?
Cookie.
He likes it.
No soup for you. No soup for you. No soup for you.
Feed me more.
As long as I can have you here with me, I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans, babe.
Welcome, everybody, to Wildfire Radio, Small Bites. I'm Donato Marino with DNL Bean to Barista Service. I'm back after missing last show due to a total knee replacement.
The Bionic Man has returned. Good to have you, buddy.
Yeah, same here.
We missed you. We had a whole barbecue-themed show. Tim Monk brought in some egg rolls. We ate like kings, talked about food, but the show never really feels complete unless we talk to someone, and he was missing that week as well. You know who that was?
Not John Howard Fusco.
He was, but just like you have returned, a phoenix rises from the ashes, and so has he. How's it going tonight, buddy?
Evening, everyone. How are we all doing?
We're doing well.
Good, good, good. I want to talk about Sonny's Cocktail Joint. This is a new restaurant and bar on South Street that opened this past week. According to Michael Klein at the Inquirer, the location was formerly the Cambridge, but the owners of the Cambridge decided to change the concept to make it more downscale with a simpler menu that includes burgers, dogs, and fried chicken. But for the cocktails, this is the star of the show. Plenty of fun choices to have as far as the cocktail menu. And again, that's Sonny's Cocktail Joint. That's on 1508 South Street. If you're going to an Eagles game this season, you'll be able to enjoy beers from Two Locals Brewing. That's the name of the brewing company. It's Two Locals Brewing, Philadelphia's only black-owned brewery. And according to Billy Penn, Two Locals does not even have their own brick-and-mortar location yet. But they got the gig for the Eagles when Eagles ownership saw them featured in a store on the Inquirer, and one of the brewers had an Eagles hat on. So they got the gig. So words of the wise, make sure you show off your sports pride, because you may never know where that might lead you to. So again, Two Locals Brewing will be available at Eagles games this season. Speaking of Billy Penn, they're also keeping a running tab of local restaurants that are requiring proof of vaccination. This is a very controversial subject. I'm sure we'll talk about more this in the upcoming weeks. So if you look at Billy Penn, they'll give you a running list of restaurants that are asking for proof of vaccination. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Eating Nest Jersey, as well as South Jersey Food Team website and Facebook page for more foodie adventures.
Awesome, buddy. Well, it's always great to hear from you, and always full of good information, isn't he, Don?
Yes, he is.
I know. I missed him.
Wow.
You were home, and still
had no
missed him.
I had choice to miss him. I shared your pain, though, John.
Have a good one, buddy. Great to talk to you.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Yeah, so you are new and improved there, Mr. Donato. You had knee surgery, and you are back and better than ever. Quicker than anticipated, I must say.
I'm an athlete.
Without a doubt.
It must be, that's what I keep telling myself.
The body of a god.
No. But, yeah, it's coming along well. The key is therapy. You got to do your therapy, you know, three times a day. You know, don't overdo it, but you got to stretch it. You got to get those ligaments, muscles, whatever got damaged during the knee replacement process. And so I tell everybody, do your therapy, and it hurts, but in the long run, it's going to pay off. My mobility is so much better than it was 3 weeks ago.
Well, we are so happy to hear that, but it is a food show, so we have to ask. How was the food at the hospital? You don't have to name where you were at in case it was bad.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say I've had worse food, but it was edible. It was good. I mean, bland. I mean, they don't add anything to it more than they have to.
Wouldn't you think if, I wonder if there is a hospital out there that's like known for its food.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out.
I don't know if I would be interested. I'm more interested in having it be well known that they have good doctors.
Well, yeah, the food would have to be an added bonus.
Like, have you heard that the food there is a top Michelin star, but the doctors are terrible?
Yeah, just don't get operated. You go there to eat.
But I'll tell you that not only is it a celebration that you are back to the show, you've had your knee replacement, we're all feeling festive. They're feeling festive on the West Coast as well. And the reason being is it's 21st Amendment Brewery's forthcoming 21st anniversary party. So it is time for us to feel festive, and we have 21st Amendment Brewery online with us. Let's see who we're talking to. How's it going tonight?
Hello there. This is Miko Freitra, co-founder of 21st Amendment.
Hello, Miko. It is a pleasure to be joined by you. And we have Donato Marino, our co-host as well. And he's not only our co-host, he's a tavern owner as well. And Don, I'm sure you're familiar with 21st Amendment.
Yes, I am. It's I like the colorful presentation that they have. The beer, I mean, itself speaks for itself.
And they always have.
But you could notice their cans from a mile away sitting in the cooler waiting to get consumed.
And that's a good thing.
That's
because
a good draw. It's a very good draw.
You want to make sure that the eyes are drawn to your product. So kudos to you. But Miko, let's get started. It's your 21st anniversary party. Let's rewind for a bit. What the heck were you guys thinking 21 years ago? Because it was a much different scene on the adult beverage side 21 years ago. There was, I mean, Don, you know, you've owned a tavern for many, many, many years. It was probably three or four major players back then.
That was it.
And now it's a free-for-all almost. So what were you guys thinking back then, Miko?
That's kind of funny you ask, because that we were kind of on the downturn of the first wave of craft breweries, which peaked in the mid 90s and then started declining. And we thought we'd missed the boat. We thought, oh, we're too late. It's too late to open a craft brewery now. It's already been done. But obviously, that was not the case. And craft breweries took off again in the early 2010s, and we were able to ride that wave. So I guess that's what we were thinking.
And what was it? Was it a displeasure of what you were being offered when you went out to have a beverage? Was it the old, you know what, I can do better than this? What was it? What was the inspiration behind the initial process to begin 21st Amendment?
Well, my business partner, Sean O'Sullivan, and I, he grew up in L.A., and I was living in L.A. for many years after college. And during the 90s, L.A. was kind of a wasteland for craft beer, but there was a big scene that was burgeoning in Northern California and the Pacific Northwest. So it really was initially, hey, we want to be able to make better beer that we can't buy in the stores, and we want to be closer to this scene that is, just starting to take off. And, just be a part of this business and a part of this group of people that was really making history and reviving styles that had not been available to consumers for forever, you know, styles from around the world. So it was a little bit of all of that.
And I have to say that, like Don, Don was very familiar with Prior Product. He carries it at his establishment. That your
thank you.
Packaging is very catching. It catches the eye nicely. One of the things, my first memory of your product, whether it's good or bad, I remember this was about 15, 16 years ago, and the beer festivals around here started to pop up, if you remember that, Don.
And I do.
It was sort of a new phenomenon around here when they were having the regional beer festivals. So there was a beer festival actually in Philadelphia. And a group of my friends decided to go, and I don't know if it was the initial release, because I don't know how old the product was, but it was at least new around here, and it was the Hell or High watermelon brand.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I said, that is one heck of an interesting flavor of beer. I'm going to go try it. And I fell in love with it. I thought it was a fantastic product. Lo and behold, my other friends are making fun of me. Ah, look at him. Beer, watermelon beer. 6 months later, I have to tell you, every single picnic, barbecue, everywhere I went to in the Philadelphia area, everyone was serving 21st Amendment Hell or High watermelon beer, and even they were drinking it then. I said, oh, look at this. How times change. So
that's great.
That was sort of my introduction to your product. So you guys really do have an innovative feel, great packaging, things like that. Where did the flavor profiles come from? Is it a collaboration between you and Sean? You have a very distinct brand flavors and also names for the brand.
Well, it's a little bit of everything. Watermelon beer that you mentioned actually was a homebrew that I invented in my basement in San Francisco in the late 90s. And, you know, you could buy some fruit beers, mostly apricot beers and things like that, but they were very sweet. And you could only have one and then you'd have to move on to something a little bit more dry. And I remember thinking, you know, watermelon would be interesting, but it's probably not going to work because it's just water. And I don't know if it's going to give enough flavor to the beer. But we tried it out. I tried it out at home. And the yeast really enjoyed the watermelon sugars. They ate those watermelon sugars up. And it created this beer that was very dry and crisp that still tasted like beer, but just had this hint of watermelon in the finish. And so it was a winner. I remember getting a bottle of Sean and him saying, we're never going to serve this at our brew pub. Nobody's ever going to drink this crap. And we ended up trying to do a big batch of it at our little brew pub in San Francisco. And we always use whole fresh watermelons. Now we use a watermelon puree, but we allow that watermelon to ferment out and it just took off. And it was, our big summer favorite beer. Well, ever since that first day in 2001.
Well, I have to say you're a genius, sir, because it's a fantastic product. And
thank you. I don't know about that.
And I think even your own partner was making fun of you. Like the crowd I was around was making fun of me. And lo and behold, like you said, it's a summer staple across the nation. What is your number one seller overall?
Well, watermelon is only a 6 month beer, but it was our number one seller for many years. And now we make our original IPA. It's called Brew Free or Die IPA. It's a West Coast style IPA. And about 6 years ago, we came out with a blood orange version. And we said, you know, we've been making watermelon beer for, 15 years. We know how to do this right. We use fresh fruit. We use whole fresh pureed blood orange that we get from Italy. And that has become our number one seller now. So the blood orange IPA is number one. The watermelon is number two. And then, we try to stay innovative. We actually brewed a beer for our 21st anniversary. It's available in limited quantities throughout the country right now. It's called 21st Anniversary IPA. And it was really fun because when we opened in 2000, IPA, which was the West Coast style of IPA, think like Stone IPA or the original Sierra Nevada Torpedo, things like that, was the dominant style. But nowadays, obviously, hazies are much more prominent, and hazies feature late hop additions that give it a much softer hop flavor and a much fruitier flavor from the hops. So we're calling this a new world version of a West Coast IPA. So we still make it with a similar malt backbone and some of the same bittering hops, but then we do late hop additions of these new world aroma hops like Cashmere and El Dorado to give it this really nice, fruity, round, soft, and sort of a tropical-y aroma and flavor to it. So I think, it's always a matter of trying to innovate and do new things and keep up with what others are doing and try to reinvent.
That's great. And also, as you mentioned, you're having all of these different varieties of hops in your new 21st anniversary IPA. Can I ask you how sourcing is coming? I mean, I know Don has firsthand in the coffee and espresso industry, getting parts, getting espresso, getting coffee beans. Sourcing ingredients is very difficult in almost every single field, whether it's chips for automobiles or even food. How is sourcing hops going for you guys? Is it more of a domestic product, or are you running into the same struggles as many other businesses?
We haven't had as many problems with hops this year. We in the industry as a whole have had a lot of problems in past years. We do contract our hops, and so we have multiple years contracted in advance. So they're growing essentially to meet your volume. But that's sort of the standard hops that are the bittering hops. Some of these new aroma hops are definitely harder to find. And you need to try to buy them on the spot market or try to go out and get them from other brewers. But fortunately, we've been able to find what we need. And we're in pretty good shape because of our contracts.
Well, that's good.
That's good to know.
Lord knows, Don knows the struggle of getting people espresso. It's not easy. Yeah. If they were missing espresso and their beer, there just might be a revolution.
that guy for beer.
Or putting their espresso in the beer, then you have problems.
Still waiting for a coffee beer to come out.
I think there is a coffee
beer.
Go ahead.
There's a bunch of them, but we did a collaboration last year with Pete's Coffee, which is right here in Berkeley, right where we are. And we actually did an IPA made with Pete's Coffee. Most of the coffee beers you see are like porters or stouts, where you're using the coffee to accentuate the roasty character of the beer. But in this case, we used a really light, very low-roasted blend of Ethiopian coffee that has this kind of a blueberry aroma and flavor to it to go in the IPA. And it worked really wonderfully well. It was like this nice, hoppy, bitter IPA with just a little roastiness and definitely a touch of coffee flavor.
We'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, that definitely does sound interesting. Now, getting back to your anniversary, you've got a big bash coming up Saturday, August 21st. It's the 21st Amendment Brewery Party at the San Leandro Brewery. You're going to have birthday collaboration brews, live music, food trucks, on and on and on and on. My question to you is, this sounds like an amazing time. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it on that date. Will there be any live streaming of the party on social medias, websites, anything like this? Because I know your fan base is certainly large enough that there might be a demand that other people would like to join that can't.
You know, that's a really good idea and a really good question. We actually don't have any plans for that at this time. This is we do do an annual anniversary party every year in August. And we've been doing it at our big San Leandro location in the parking lot for several years. Obviously, we couldn't have a party last year. And it's kind of fortunate that we're 21st Amendment, because last year was our 20th anniversary, which obviously is a big celebration for most people. But we had said in advance, well, let's kind of just, you know, leave the 20th alone and play it down and really aim for, for the big bucks, not 21st. But we do have live bands all day. We are doing 5 collaboration beers with breweries from all over California, actually. So we're going to have those beers available. But live streaming, we haven't talked about. Maybe it's not too late to do something.
Yeah. I mean, definitely, I think you would have enough time if you have it, because I think there would be enough people around who would like to virtually celebrate with you. I know I certainly would.
Well, they would just be watching us drink all these good collaboration beers if they couldn't get themselves.
maybe it could create jealousy. You are correct.
That's true.
Maybe they would get upset. Yeah. Like, you know what? They're having such a good time while I'm sitting here. This is ridiculous. But you guys, you guys started obviously in California. You're now sold in 33 states. Do you remember the first state other than California that you guys started to be distributed in, and what the feeling was when you started to expand and grow? It had to be special.
Oh, it was amazing. Well, when we first started packaging our beer and selling it out in the general public, we didn't have any capacity, our brewery in San Francisco, and we wanted to put our beer in cans, which was a very new thing at the time. And so we ended up finding a partner brewery in Minnesota that was able to do what we wanted. They were able to bring in our own ingredients, our own yeast, our own watermelon, and brew the beers that we were making. And so we were making this beer in Minnesota, and then shipping it back to California. And we realized pretty quickly that it was a lot cheaper to ship beer to the East Coast. And people wanted West Coast beers back in those days. This is when around 2008, 2009. And, you still had breweries were growing in the East Coast, but they were still clamoring for these West Coast styles. So we immediately went to, I think it was probably Boston, New York, D.C., and Philly, right around about the same time in 2009.
Wow.
Around the summer of 2009. So we hit those basic four East Coast markets, and we did really well there because, again, people wanted these West Coast beers. And like I said, it was cheaper to send the beer back there, so it made a lot of sense economically for us. And then ultimately, we built our own larger production brewery here in San Leandro. And so now we have to make that beer and ship it across the country, so it's not quite as advantageous, but we're still glad to do it, and we're still glad we have such a great fan base in places like Philadelphia.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. Now, one of the other questions that I had is brings back what Don was mentioning earlier about the artwork on the cans.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a contest of people sending in artwork for a new product? I think that could be exciting too, because say, for example, you could get the tavern owners involved, and Don's tavern has someone who actually is artistic. You probably have someone who can draw something, Don.
The more they drink, the better they draw.
And the tavern owner could send in the drawing or the concept. Has that ever happened with you? I know other brands have dabbled in that. Some seem to have been successful, others not. I just wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if you guys have tried that or not.
Well, for all our mainline core beers, we really want the look to stay the same so that they look like a family and you can tell that it's a 21st Amendment beer. So we have an artist that's our standard artist who's got this very kind of Americana line art drawing style, do all of that. But we have a new limited release series that we do in San Francisco, which we call the Chalkboard Series. And it is exactly that. It's essentially devoted to the chalkboard artists all over the country that do beer signs for their breweries. And what we do is we solicit local artists to submit artwork, and we make labels, and we do a limited release run that's available locally in our tap rooms and then to some of the local retailers here. And so we've done a bunch of those now, and we put the name of the artist on the label, feature a lot of local people, and it's really been fun.
That's great. I mean, because it really gets people involved, and it makes the individual who has the product feel that much closer, because you feel like part of a family, truly. And sometimes that's lost in some of the bigger brands, and I like that you guys are still having that sort of community outreach to reach out to everyone. But I have to say, I couldn't be more proud of you guys. As I mentioned, it was many, many years ago that I heard of you guys, and you're now a household name, especially in the Philadelphia region and across the nation. 21st Amendment Brewery, your forthcoming 21st anniversary party. We hope everything goes fantastic. Nico, thank you so much for joining us. Please feel free to share social media, website, anything like that before you go, buddy.
I really appreciate that. Thank you, guys. Thanks for the kind words, and thanks for all the support. And here's to 21 more.
Exactly.
Cheers.
Have a great night.
All right. Cheers.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good product, Don.
Yeah.
And if you have a good product and a catchy design, you're going to be successful.
Yes, you are. I mean, the taste of IPAs, they took a little time to catch on. Because, you know, most people are used to drinking Budweiser, Coors Light, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And they all have basically a flat taste from start to finish, where the IPAs, as you're drinking it, you get different notes.
Of flavors
in the beer that you're drinking. And you're like, wow.
And I guess it's because of these newfangled hybrid hops that he was mentioning. I'm not a real beer expert. I'm an expert at drinking it, not per se making it, as most things. I can eat lots of food, make very little of it. But it makes you wonder, like, with these new hops? How do they come up with these hybrid? Like, who has the brain power to do that? It's so amazing.
Yeah, I had to agree with you 100%. I guess people have a lot of times on their hand. Sitting there going, no, let's put these two together and see what happens.
Yeah, I put it as brain power. You put it like, a lot of free time on their hands. But you have your victory garden. Maybe you could start making some of these hops.
Well, somebody told me I should grow hops. It's good coverage.
Okay.
Keep the weeds down.
Okay.
So that conversation has come up.
A DNL beer maybe in the works, special edition. And you've said that you haven't found a good coffee beer that you like. You're the man.
Well, he's right about it. A lot of them are like a stout taste, and you get that overwhelming, powerful beer taste instead of a gentle coffee additive to the beer, or like the watermelon beer that you spoke about.
Yes. I would say that they are probably better at doing it than most, because they already know from the lessons learned from, as he was mentioning, the watermelon. You just want a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a tad.
Yeah, because, you're buying a beer. You're buying a beer. You're expecting to taste beer with whatever hint of flavor that you're putting in there. Like he also mentioned that the people were making it with mangoes and it was so sweet, you could only have one can of beer. Well, that's kind of anti-production if you're trying to sell beer and the customer could only drink one can of beer because it's so sweet and it's overpowering by the mango.
Better be selling big cans.
Yeah. Yeah, one quart size cans.
Only comes in a gallon size. But, I mean, it's difficult to know where the true balance lies of too much or too little, because everyone's taste is different.
That's true. That's true. Like there's, I mean, thank God in Philadelphia, there's so many new local breweries popping up all over the place, brewery pubs, and they're all making their own beer. They're making it their style, and they're attracting people that like their particular taste. I've gone to, I don't know if you've ever been to Evil Genius Brewing Company.
Fishtown.
Yes. Under the L.
Yes.
And they make, I would say, at least 10 different IPAs. And I don't think I've had one bad one yet.
Yeah.
That was there.
Yeah. I mean, they put on a good operation.
They do.
There.
They have a, I don't know what you call it, a flight or a fleet where they give you 4 ounce or 6 ounce. Mm-hmm. You buy like 5 different IPAs and you get to taste all the different ones without buying the big 16 ounces.
This way you're not walking out the door stumbling with 5 full glasses.
Yeah. And it's genius the way they do it. That's evil genius.
It's evil.
But the names they have, I can't remember all of them, but it's like Dirty Dishwasher. And, I'm probably saying it wrong, but you get the idea. The names that they use are very catchy phrases.
Yeah.
So you'll remember what beer you're drinking.
And I forget what brewery it was. Might have been them. I'm not saying it is. There was a brewery that got in trouble with one of their catchy names.
Mm.
And I wish I could remember what it was, but it was hilarious.
It could be them.
Whatever it was, but sometimes people get a little too sensitive.
Yeah, it's a beer.
Yeah, it's like, you're only having the drinker. We're not trying to create world peace here.
Yeah, you're just coming out here to relax, enjoy yourself, have a good time, and go home, and if you can't drive, take Uber or Lyft or whatever your preference is to
that always work
to make it home.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, it's to each their own, as they say. But I know with this weather, Don, it was great. We were talking before the show briefly. I went out on a boat for 8 hours today. 52 crabs.
Gosh, like, not bad, 52 crabs. All keepers.
So delicious.
Yeah. I mean, I have guys that went and they catch a lot of crabs, but they only come home with six.
I felt bad because when we were getting back to the marina, there was this little boy, had to be 6, 7 years old at most, and someone came over to him and said, "Oh, how'd you do? Did you have a fun time?" And he goes, "We only caught 4 small crabs. We had to throw them all back all day." Ugh. I was like, "Oh, that's a rough day."
It is. It is.
Be out there all day and only get 4 little itty bitty crabs that you had to throw back. But with crab, it surprised me, and it goes back to the conversation we were having with 21st Amendment sourcing. With COVID and everything going on, supply chains have really been wreaked havoc.
Devastated.
Devastated. Perfect word. The other day, I was trying to get crab meat in a can. No one could get it. I called the one place. They said they haven't had it in about 6 months.
Yeah.
Another place said they haven't had it for at least 4 months. Thankfully, I was able to get a tip on where to go to
get some.
But it was a can that I used to pay, I don't know, $18, $19.
Yeah.
$38.
Yeah. Wait. In September, the consumer is going to be very shocked on the price of products. Because price of containers from Europe have almost tripled.
Oof.
So, you know, to get the same amount, that's coffee-wise, was it's the same amount of coffee is going up 30 to 40%.
And I heard the crop for coffee, I guess, I mean, you would know better than me, weather-related maybe. They said the crop was down because of bad weather in certain regions.
I guess it depends on where they source it.
Okay.
Because, you know, South America, you got so many, Africa, Indonesia. So I guess it depends on where you source your beans from or the blending.
So it could be a certain supplier was affected.
Yeah.
With that. I didn't know who exactly was affected, but someone was saying,
even aluminum is short. They're low on production of aluminum. And the aluminum they use to line the coffee bags to keep the coffee fresh inside.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, when you get the paper bags, they have a thin aluminum coating. Yeah.
I thought you meant like the burlap sack.
No. Okay. After it's roasted.
After it's roasted, yes.
To keep it fresher, they have a thin aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
And that aluminum is...
I mean, I would have to assume that's going to affect many industries because a bag of potato chips has that little, little super thin aluminum in there to keep it fresh. It makes you wonder what normal will be when we're going to consider that as normal moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, September supposedly... people will be going back to work, but then there won't be enough supplies to be able to sell your product for the people that are coming back to help you sell your product.
Yeah, and I was talking to someone like, will we ever get back to what we consider the old normal? Will that return? I don't know.
It's really hard to say with all the little things that we've been going through for the last 6, 7 months. And then you got this new variant that's supposed to be the Delta strand.
Yes, making it very difficult.
September, October, who knows what's going to happen.
And even as you know, sourcing parts, and you've got businesses whose machine is down and you have no control over it whatsoever. But the business owners are taking their frustrations out on you.
Yes, they are. I get calls all the time. Is my part in yet? No. Am I part in yet? No. I'll give you the guy's number. You want to call him? Maybe you can get it faster than me. I mean, you know, you don't want to say that to people. You think it more than say it most of the time. But, I understand the frustration because they're just coming out of a lockdown. They're just starting to make some money. The machine breaks, and you can't get the replacement part for it.
That's a shame.
I mean,
it makes it difficult on all fronts.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's. I think people are just going to get used to this. You can't just snap your finger and get everything you want right away. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's the times. It's. I have no control over it. The manufacturer that's here has to order it from overseas or whoever they're ordering it from. But they have no control over it. There's only so much you can keep in stock for cash flow.
Yeah, because you can't keep everything in stock.
I mean, you try to keep the essentials that, you know, you normally wear and tear parts.
Yeah.
But how many pieces can you keep?
It's difficult. It's difficult. But I'm going to tell you one thing, that there is a wonderful story out of everything that we've been talking about recently. And that would be Fred Spencer. He's the co-founder of AYO Foods, bringing authentic West African cuisine to U.S. grocers. How's it going tonight, Fred?
I'm good. Thank you so much.
It's our pleasure. Now, it's no surprise that hot sauce represents a major connection for all sorts of different people all around the globe. Hot sauce is one of the most famous condiments, and the segment has grown exponentially year on top of year as the market has just exploded. You guys have put a little twist on things, and you guys have hot elements and hot sauce. Is a little bit of the background, how you got started, and what's going on with you guys.
Sure. I should say too that my co-founder and wife is here with me as well. Her name is Pratit Spencer.
Well,
but we have two
Hi, how's it going? Hey,
we are doing great. We certainly did not want to miss out on you joining us as well, and we are thrilled to have both of you. Thank you so much for joining us.
No worries at all.
So we have two hot sauces. One is traditionally found in Liberia, and then the other one is traditionally found in Ghana. The Liberian one is called pepper sauce. It's a habanero base, super spicy, but very flavorful. It's probably the one that you would traditionally consider more of a hot sauce. Then our second one, which is called Shito, and that one's from Ghana. It's more of a flavorful one. It's a spread. It's a scoop type of sauce, and it's one you can probably share and eat with anything. Also, we love to use these sauces for marinades as well, especially chicken. And the shito can also be used on beef as well.
Oh, I mean, they sound fantastic. They're really great. What was the journey like bringing these West African cuisines to U.S. retailers? Because for the most part, if you're going down a grocery aisle, Mexican foods are already well-established, so they've got shelf space. Asian foods, they are well-established as well. It's a difficult game to grab shelf space in a grocer because every inch of shelf space is money in their pocket. So they don't want to have a product sitting there that could or could not sell. What was the journey like bringing that cuisine to the retailers? What were the struggles and some of the things you were able to fight with them?
Yeah, well, Derek, I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of just growth of kind of bolder, more international flavors in the aisle. And so for us, coming from a Liberian family, we just saw that there was a massive gap in the market. Like, our food was just not represented at all, and not only in frozen, but anywhere in the store, really. So we saw it as a huge opportunity to really bring some different flavors to the aisle to really meet that kind of consumer interest in international flavors, but to do it kind of in a way that was kind of inherent in who we are. So we launched in frozen last summer, but the intention was always to scale beyond. And so hot sauce was just a natural extension. And to your point, it's a category that's blown up pretty dramatically. And so we're excited to be able to extend these flavors into a new space in the store. And really, we think we win the hot sauce battle hands down. So excited to kind of take on the challenge of other brands in the aisle.
That's and right. I'll just add that, you know, we also launched during the pandemic. And so as grocery use kind of booming when people were staying at home, grocers just looking for something to kind of differentiate the aisle. And so it opened up a gate and a door for us to get in. And so we have been accepted pretty widely and been successful so far. So,
and that's great. And as you mentioned, being accepted so widely, one of the things that we can see in this industry of supermarkets and food distribution is sometimes it's difficult to break certain barriers. Can you describe to us what food inclusion is and why it is so important for diverse communities in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is when anyone walks into a store, they want to see a store that reflects their experience growing up in this country, you know? And so for us, it was just really bringing a bit of ourselves to the aisle. You know, while we go to a lot of specialty markets today, you know, if we want to make the food that we enjoy at home, it's often the only place that we can go to find the ingredients or the dishes. And so, you know, I think in the world that we live in today, I think folks want to see themselves represented in the stores that they're frequenting. But I think above and beyond that, there's just a growing desire to experience the joy of different cultures. Io literally translates into joy. and food is one really, really easy way that you can do that. And so we talk a lot about being able to travel to West Africa through your taste buds and delivering that type of experience. I think particularly in, you know, the last, you know, year and a half when we're all kind of homebound more than normal, a break from the norm is very much needed and something that we're excited to be able to offer and put a little bit different twist on it.
Without a doubt. Now, what would you say is a go-to dish that obviously you have the sauces out on the market, so it could be possible for restaurants and restaurateurs to get a little bit more adventurous on their menus as well. What is a dish that you would really highly recommend to chefs and restaurateurs to put on a menu that could start to introduce the American palate to something that would just knock everyone's socks off?
Sure. I mean, I think all of our dishes can easily be transferable in that way. But if I had to pick just one, I would go with Wache. It's the one that we kind of partner with Chef Eric Ajapong, and will be in grocery stores. Well, it should be in grocery stores currently today. But Wache is what, you know, what the American population would consider beans and rice or red beans and rice. We just use a different type of cooking process, and we use a red pea, similar to, you know, what you would, like a bean that you would see in red beans and rice. But Wache is a very flavorful dish. It's also vegetarian and vegan, and it's very flavorful, very good, and I think would be accepted widely by the population in America.
And I should say it pairs, like, incredibly, incredibly well with the Chateau sauce, too. So they're often served together. But even as a small introduction, I'll add, like, often at home, we just do, like, a simple grilled piece of fish with our pepper sauce. And it just, like, amps it up a notch and gives it a flavor that I think is distinctive, but I think readily acceptable by any mainstream chef or consumer.
Well, I have to say, I know before the show, me and Don were talking, and we are highly interested and intrigued. We both consider ourselves worldview foodies. I'll eat anything all around the world, and I'm ashamed to say I'm not very familiar with West African cuisine. So congratulations to both of you. We couldn't be more proud. AYO Foods is bringing authentic West African cuisine to U.S. grocers with your homemade frozen food line in certain Whole Food locations, and also your hot sauce line, which is carried by 1,200 grocery stores around the United States. So great job, guys. We want our listeners to be on the lookout for the products, keep an eye out. And can you share a website, social media, anything like that for anyone to learn a little bit more or maybe even get it shipped to them directly?
Of course. Our website is www.ioayo-foods.com. And we're on all the social media at IO Foods.
Perfect. Have a great night. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Now, talking about being a foodie, we're going to be joined by Rich Massey, president and co-founder of Fight on McKenna Foundation. The foundation was formed in memory of their 14-year-old daughter, McKenna, who lost her battle with leukemia in September of 2018. And she was quite a foodie.
Yeah.
And to keep her memory going, they created this foundation in 2 short years of existence. Don, they have raised over $200,000.
Yeah, God bless them.
To help fund programs in partnership with the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia to help kids and families as they deal with the rigors of cancer treatments. First and foremost, Rich, God bless you guys. That's an amazing achievement. I don't know how anyone can pull off such an event as successful as that. That's really magic, but that has to speak to the special person that McKenna was. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the special event that you guys have going on, Bite for the Fight, and what's scheduled for this year? Because I'm sure it's going to be bigger and better because in 2 years you've done that, and this year you've got even more things planned.
Well, thanks, Derek and Don, for having me on. Your kind words about McKenna and about our foundation. So the Bite for the Fight Food Festival, we founded to help raise money for the Fight on McKenna Foundation to support the programs that we're doing with CHOP. We're doing some pretty cool, innovative stuff. And because McKenna was such a foodie, our charity event had to be a food festival. It just was the right fit. And so we created this back in 2019. It was our first ever. We grossed over $100,000 in that event. We just had an amazing group of people who came down with some unique talents that McKenna had touched in her short life, and that are moved and passionate about our mission to help families dealing with pediatric cancer. And it was just an amazing, amazing event. So last year we had to do it virtually, obviously because of the pandemic. And even in that format where all we did was donation sponsorships and silent auction, we still raised over $50,000.
Wow.
So
that's good.
It's been great. So now we're excited to be back in person on Saturday, September 25th. We'll be at the Kimberton Fairgrounds, which is right outside Phoenixville, PA. The event is from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. VIP tickets get you the whole 4 hours. And general admission tickets get you in from 1 to 3. So if you want to beat the crowds or you have kids sporting event, want to get there early, the VIP tickets will allow you to get in an hour before everybody else. And so this event is, we just really reached out to the community, and we have over 30 restaurant and beverage vendors committed to the event this year. A lot of them are centered around the 422 corridor, Phoenixville, Exton, Chester Springs, Westchester area. And we have really just some amazing restaurants from the local area that are going to be coming to present what is their best bite. And our guests get to vote of what they believe is the best bite of the event. So one or two bite appetizers of what you'll be tasting, plus tons of great spirits and cocktails and brews from lots of breweries, wineries, and distilleries that will also be joining us. So we're really excited about the event this year, and we're going to be headlined by Aunt Mary Pat, the comedian from Delaware County, is going to be hosting us up, and it's going to be fantastic.
That is awesome.
Great event.
I mean, and the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, they do so many amazing things. Was that chosen because that was a hospital that you guys were going to and using?
Yes, McKenna was treated at, so McKenna had actually cancer twice. She had a kidney cancer in 2014 when she went through 9 months of treatment, and that was all done in, at their King of Prussia Center. We got her into remission for almost 3 years. And one of the side effects of some of the cancer treatments is it can cause a secondary cancer. And in McKenna's case, it was leukemia. So that was, you know, she was diagnosed in late 2017, and she had another 9 month battle and had a bone marrow transplant, more chemotherapy, et cetera. And really the totality of all those treatments is what, you know, she ended up passing just from multiple organ failure and, you know, just very tough. You know, her little body just couldn't take any more of you know, the treatments are just really, really tough. So why we were in CHOP, we were in CHOP for over 150 nights. And there I met a lot of families that, you know, weren't being impacted by cancer. And we were so lucky to have a great support system through family and my work and our community, our school district, et cetera, that we, you know, I quickly realized that not all families have that, and people have to quit their jobs because somebody has to be in the hospital with kids all the time. And so we just said, there's got to be a better way to like just support families that are going through this treatment. How do we just improve the overall quality of life for the kids and the families that are going through that? So we partnered with CHOP. We've created some innovative programs. The main thing being around, of course, because McKenna was a foodie, is nutrition and then also fitness. So we've kind of partnered with one of McKenna's oncologists to sponsor this integrative oncology, really focused on food and nutrition, of how can you use food for medicinal values to help with nausea and to make sure that you're staying as strong as you can to deal with the rigors of these cancer treatments and what it puts their bodies through.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a subject that a lot of people don't think about, but those who are caretakers or know someone who is going through cancer knows that all too well, that the nausea and things like that, and especially for an individual who is a foodie and loves food, it becomes difficult at times to go through that battle because not only because of the nausea, but your taste buds as well. I mean, I've had family members who have passed away from cancer, and a lot of things would taste metallic or wouldn't taste them at all. So it is a difficult time for them because emotionally it's emotionally draining to not enjoy food. That's one of the greatest joys in life. Is food. I mean, you do it every day, and whenever you taste something great, your body perks up. And you're like, wow, that was great. And to lose one of those joys is difficult. So that's really fantastic that you guys have focused on that for families and individuals to about that aspect of it. Now, with the Bite for the Fight, is there a best of the Bite? Is there any sort of like people's choice? Anything like that for the people coming, or is it just everybody's coming? It's very relaxed, no sort of competitive environment, anything like that.
Well, McKenna was a fighter, so when we designed the event, we said we got to bring a little competition to it. So, so as a guest, you will get a we did it kind of online in 2019, and it worked. But this year, we're actually going to give everybody a token when you come into our event. And you'll get to keep that token, and each of our vendors will have a voting box at their station. And as you're going around tasting all those, and this is an all-you-can-taste event, so you're not having to purchase once you get in. You pay the one-time entry fee, and it's an all-you-can-taste type of event. And you can just go around table to table and taste all the great bites that our folks have. And when you find the best one you like, you drop it in their voting box, and we'll tally at the end, and we'll announce a winner and trophy, and there'll be the reigning Fight for the Fight champion for 2021.
That's great. That sounds like fun, Don.
It does.
Can't go wrong there. Great food, great event, great purpose, even for an even greater good cause for money going towards the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. I have to say, Rich, I know McKenna couldn't be more proud of the things that you, your family, her supporters have put on in her memory. And it's really touching. I know for me personally, what you've done, I'm speechless.
Yeah, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. The great things that you're doing for your daughter.
It's amazing, especially helping others with the amount that you guys have. The 2021 Bite for the Fight Food Festival, Saturday, September 25th. Please share website, social media, anything like that, Rich, before you go, for anyone else who wants some more information.
Sure. Yep. So tickets are on sale, and we are almost sold out of VIP tickets, which is great for us, but for all your listeners, you need to act fast if you want to get into the VIP session. But they can be purchased at biteforthefight.com. All those words put together, biteforthefight.com. Everything, sponsorships and tickets, can be purchased there. And then we are on all the social platforms at bite4thefight.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Don, I mean, my goodness gracious. Talk about a good deed.
Yeah. It's touching that thank God his work and the people behind him were supporting him in this venture that he's doing to honor his daughter, help other people that don't have the resources.
Just selfless.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just it's something that they're taking time out of their own day for that, but talking about things and somebody who's wonderful, and she's selfless as well at times to help others.
Yes, she is.
That would be Chef Barbie Marshall. How's it going tonight, Chef Barbie?
Hey, how are you?
We're doing great.
Doing great, Chef.
I'm in South Carolina again, poolside, just trying to soak up as much summer as possible. I was in Philly last week.
Wow.
And it was cold. It was very cold. Like, and everybody was like, what do you mean? And I was like, it's 70 degrees. It's freezing. It's completely freezing.
You're used to that southern heat already?
I am. Like, 100 degrees and 100% humidity got to me for a little bit.
But don't you know higher heat and higher humidity make bigger bugs?
Yeah, you know, I noticed that the bugs in the north, they eat the crops, and the bugs down here eat people. I experienced that firsthand.
And they fly.
Yeah.
And they fly. Everything flies. All of it. Everything. Everything has wings, and it all flies.
Exactly. But, we're happy to hear that you're doing well.
I am, and I actually did not get a chance. It's just like two things I wanted to talk about was, like, there's a Facebook group that everybody hates called the Cheesesteak Gurus on Facebook. And I just think that it's hilarious that it made it all the way to Philly Magazine and everybody just really hates the group. And I found a cheesesteak in Greenville, South Carolina, well, Spartanburg, South Carolina, called The Real Deal. And when I went in to order it, I think the owners said, you're from Philly. And I was like, how did you know? And they knew because of the way I ordered my cheesesteak. So this is very important. I know most of our listeners are from Philadelphia area. So when you leave, if you can find someone that is a Philadelphian that makes cheesesteaks, generally it's going to be pretty solid, because it was a pretty solid cheesesteak. I was actually really happy with it. I didn't get a chance to get one while I was home. I was kind of upset about it and took a chance and was like, all right, I'm going to try this out-of-state cheesesteak from some Philadelphians that have transplanted down south, and it worked.
Yeah.
So
you'd be surprised. And
as long as they originated from Philadelphia, they know what they need.
Yeah, they know what they need to be doing.
You want to know what I give you even more, and in a small bite aspect, is they also had water ice, and that made me happy too, because I didn't have water ice while I was home, and they don't have water ice down here. They have snow cones.
Yeah, shaved ice.
Shaved ice.
There is nothing more disappointing than thinking water ice and coming upon a snow cone. Very, very disappointing. No one understood my disappointment. They had no idea why I was so disappointed.
I understand it completely, and if you come back, it's supposed to be in the high 90s this week, so you'll feel good and comfortable in Philadelphia. But stay down there, enjoy yourself, soak in the sun while it's still happening, because winter is around the corner. Thanks so much, Chef Barbie.
All right.
Thank you, Barbie.
Yeah, all right, Don.
I'm Donato Marino with D&L Coffee, Bean to Barista Service. You can find me on Facebook, or you can call me directly. 215-365-5521 for any of your coffee needs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And I'm Derek Tim of BlueJeanFood.com. We're not going to go healthy this week. Just eat whatever you want. No healthy bite from Chef Christina. And I'm not in the mood to laugh, so no joke from Jackie the and Martland. Maybe next show, Don. We'll have to get the team back into production studio.
Okay, I got a small joke.
Oh, hurry.
What do you call a deer with no eyes?
Dough.
No idea.
Good one, Don. Hey. Have a good night, everybody.